This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Here we go. Hour 3, G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. We're only going till 6 tonight because the Rangers are in Chicago where they're going to open what is presumed to be a three-game series, but that weather up there is something else. So can't be absolutely sure that we'll get all three of these in. But tonight's broadcast is booked. It's confirmed. 6 o'clock, first pitch, 6:40. And you got Evaldi on the hill, so enjoy that. Chris Young's coming up at 4:15, so we're just 12 and a half minutes now from the Rangers president of baseball operations. And we go to Sean McFarland here in the morning news writing about what we've learned about these Rangers in the 10 games so far this season. Best start since when? 2012.
Wow.
Best start since 2012 when they lost that. What was that, a weird play-in game against the Orioles that year?
Yeah, that was they lost 163. Late, I think that was Josh Hamilton losing it in the sun at the end of the season there, and that's why they had to play the play-in game, yeah, or wild card game.
Was that game in Oakland with the one they lost?
Yeah, it was against
that
Oakland.
Hamilton lost, yes. In the sky, yeah.
That weird blue eyes.
Brutal.
Games,
the blue eyes, the gods punishing me, the caffeine, the nicotine. I mean, it was one thing after another there in the Josh Hamilton years, and the good thing is you know, he did give us two of the best seasons any Ranger ever
MVP.
Has.
MVP.
It was special. But we start here, you know, just the 8-2 record. Unbelievable what they're doing. Just one of six teams in the history of the sport that could win eight games in a 10-game span with a batting average of 192 or worse in a single season. That's not just to open up the first 10 games. That's at any point in the history of the game. No team has ever won 8 of 10 hitting this bad, Wolchuk.
That's unreal.
Tell me it's going to be fine.
I do think it's going to be fine. I do. I think that eventually the law of averages, these guys like Jock Peterson and Jake Berger and, of course, Seager, whatever happens and their average at the end of the season is there for a reason. I mean, I talked about this when they first traded for Marcus Semien and I was doing extra innings and filling in for Jared. And the first month, Semien stunk. And teams, everybody was calling,
yes,
like, what a
that.
Terrible signing.
I want to trade him.
Worst contract in baseball history. And it was, calm down. It's going to be all right. What happened? Semien ended the season just as we expected. So I think eventually.
Top five MVP vote.
It'll be all right. Leave it out.
Well, I'm going to be confident, but I would say that I do believe right now the chances of this offense being elite are on life support. You know, what we're hoping for right now is better than average, please, with a great pitching staff.
Top 15 would be great right now.
We'll get CY's thoughts on this. I don't know where his mind is. You know, I'm sure he's taking everything in stride, and, you know, well, he's not paying attention to the results, but more the process that gets you there.
No, he's going to tell you, yeah, it's a concern. And yeah, we're looking at the situation. He's not a putting his head in the sand guy.
Nope.
So when you ask him the question, he's going, yeah, we're struggling and hopefully we'll get it back and we're working hard on it. And, you know, we're trying to take batting practice. We're trying to do the video. We're trying to talk about things. And, you know, he's not going to leave any stone unturned over there.
4-6-9 Rangers couldn't hit last year and they are all year older. Why are we expecting things to change?
Well, they've got new pieces. Kyle Higashioka wasn't here last year. Jock Peterson wasn't here last
year. And Langford on a tear, maybe.
Langford, not a rookie. Yeah. Can he carry over what he was doing in September? And he's had some big moments, had a home run already this past series.
Josh Smith looks like he's kind of picked up where he's Silver Slugger guy last year.
Yeah, Josh Young should be back in the lineup tomorrow. And you didn't have Josh Young all of last year. So these things don't carry over necessarily.
With Semien, I think it applies, you know. And we'll get to that here in a little bit, but I think he is at an age where it's like, okay, the decline can come rapidly and dramatically. But for everybody else, like, I mean, Langford, that's offset by the fact that he's a year older and he's no longer a rookie. Sure. But I mean, we are kind of hoping that it was an outlier situation with Adolis Garcia and Marcus Semien and Jonah Heim, and the real versions of those players are, you know, going to reveal themselves here in the coming days and weeks. Okay, bullpen actually not bad. Luke Jackson, 5 of 5 on saves. Chris Martin has not allowed a run in his first 6 games as the 8th inning guy.
Yeah, but they blew 2. They blew 1 Saturday, and they blew save on Sunday. I think Saturday's was
8th inning, wasn't it?
6th
inning.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, that's just the bullpen giving up a lead. The blown save would be in the 9th, I guess, like, because people text in and get on us about that. But, yes, you're right. Like, the bullpen has
had I was listening to the game on the way, and they called them both blown.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Last I was listening after.
They said blown save?
Blown saves, yeah.
In the 8th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Robert Garcia was a wreck against the Red Sox. He has an ERA of 1.8. So their bullpen, 3rd best in the bigs right now. Isn't that crazy? Pretty good.
Amazing.
I mean, there are a couple of dudes in there that if they come in, I'm expecting a complete disaster, but... You know, the good ones are definitely carrying them. 4-seam fastball update. The bane of the 2024 season for your Texas Rangers was the 4-seamer. This year, still pretty bad. Actually, a point worse from 232 to 231. But here's the thing. The rest of the league is struggling as bad as the Rangers are. So instead of being 25th in the bigs, or 26th last year, they are 17th. A lot. I think that's copium right now. A lot of offensive struggles throughout the big leagues. Right, yeah. A lot of teams aren't hitting it well.
So not everyone can be the Yankees and just start the season red hot with your bats on fire.
They are on fire. Jonah Heim may have struggled mightily last year, but he's been super clutch. How about this? Since the start of the 23 season, Heim's OPS of 950 in high leverage situations, 3rd best among Rangers hitters behind Seager and Bang Bang, which is awesome. 28th best mark in all of baseball during that span. That's since the beginning of 23. Jonah Heim, 28th most clutch player in baseball. Heim's 5 walk-off hits, which include Sunday's game winner, are tied with Garcia for the most among any Ranger since the start of the 2021 season. So keep taking that in. We got the rotation has been good as well. That's another one of the 5 things we've learned about this Rangers team in the 10 games they've played so far. AL best 2.68 ERA for your starting pitchers the first 2 turns through the rotation. That's with Bradford and Gray out, and now Leiter out as well. We'll get CY's thoughts on Patrick Corbin, who's going to jump in here over the next couple of nights, I believe. I believe Patrick Corbin's just jumping in. Maybe we'll get confirmation on that if we don't have it already.
See how he looks.
Corbin says he's been telling the team he feels good. He threw all winter. He is 35 years old. He does have an ERA of just over 5 combined in the last 6 seasons, but dude is going to eat innings. And for this Rangers team right now, that is awesome with a bullpen that lacks some depth. If you can get a guy, like yesterday, you were done, right? We got to send Church out here.
Yeah.
And the lead was Church.
Yeah. Well, all their pitchers had pitched the day before, so they were down to trying to kind of scramble that thing through. But, yeah, it worked out at the end.
Okay, let's step aside as CY is going to join you on the other side of this short commercial break, and we're back on your home of the Rangers.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Yeah, buddy, time for the Chris Young Show here on The Fan. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. Never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. And the CY Show, brought to you by Anheuser-Busch and PlayScore. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Hey, guys. I'm well. How are you all?
Well, it was a lot of fun watching your baseball team again over the weekend. Where's your mind at right now with this start and so many moving parts as always?
Well, I think we're, you know, thrilled with the record, obviously. It's a great start, as good as we could have asked for. And, you know, to come out of spring training and to start the season, the first 10 to win 8, against some pretty good teams is certainly, you know, beyond expectation in some ways. And in other ways, focusing on the things that we have to do better. I mean, certainly we don't feel like we've played our best baseball. We've pitched really well. Offensively, we've gotten some timely hitting. We've run the bases well, but I don't think our bats have busted out at the level that that we're expecting, yet we've still found a way to win games. And I think that's a good characteristic to have, that when you're not playing your best baseball, you still find a way to win.
How hands-on do you get when it's the hitting that's struggling? A 193 team batting average. It's unbelievable to have won 8 of these games. It's just awesome. So how hands-on do you get, or you know, whose role is it? What's the process like of getting this resolved?
Well, I think it just depends on the timing, and it's too early right now to start worrying or panicking or making significant adjustments. I mean, I think we have to obviously stay in tune with what's going on, the way guys are swinging it, and trends over a certain period of time, but 10 days in is way too early. These guys are really established, good players, good hitters, and they're going to get hot at some point. So I think right now our job is to support them, continue to give them the resources they need, remind them how good they are, and know that it's going to come together at some point.
Well, the pitching's been sensational, and Nathan Eovaldi getting the start tonight. We saw some videos of snow at Wrigley Field. CY, what are the challenges when it comes to pitching and playing in cold weather?
Well, it's just keeping your body temperature up, you know, keeping a feel for the baseball. It's normally the cold weather means it's going to be a dry baseball, a little bit you were tough to get a grip, so to speak. So I think just keeping your body temperature up, being able to get a little moisture here and there to keep a feel for the baseball. But Evo's pitched in Boston. He's pitched in New York. He's going to have no trouble with it. He knows what to expect. He's a gamer. My guess is he's embraced this already. He's excited to pitch in these conditions, and it's going to find a way to turn it into some type of competitive advantage.
I want to circle back with Evo with you, and he's been brilliant through his first two starts, the complete game shutout that he had against the Reds. And I don't know how much you pay attention to these top 100 lists. Eovaldi wasn't even a part of the top 100 list per ESPN, and I think Major League Baseball, both of them. Is he the most underrated pitcher in the game right now?
Well, I think he certainly, if he wasn't in the top 100 list, I would say he is underrated. He's not underrated to us, and that's what I can assure you, that we value everything he brings in terms of the competitor, the performance on the field, and who he is as a person and what he means to our team. So in terms of the Texas Rangers, he's not undervalued at all, not underrated. If the rest of the league or Major League Baseball doesn't recognize that, then that's their loss. But we certainly value everything he's about, and we're so thankful he's here.
Hey, CY, you know, with Jack Leiter getting off to such a really nice start for you, though, any update on his situation with the blister?
Yeah, it's healing up. There's some new skin growing in, and it's not as raw as it was a couple days ago. It's one of these things where, you know, every week, if we continue to run him out there, it's going to get a little bit worse to the point where we're, you know, missing significant time. So we felt like it was prudent just to nip this in the bud right now and give him some extra time to heal, get this right. And hopefully he'll roll right back into the rotation, pick up where he left off as soon as this feels better, which should be right at the end of the 15-day IL stint.
Yeah, well, if he needs any extra fingers or anything like that, I'd be happy to give mine up so he can continue to pitch.
How hard is your finger throw a fastball?
I'll tell you what, I will do anything to get Jack Leiter the ability to go back out there and pitch. He's just done
well,
such a great job.
Well, we don't want your 68 mile an hour fastballs. We want his 100
miles.
No,
see why? It's a finger, right? It's a finger. It has skin on it, right?
He's telling you to keep your damn finger, Brian.
No, I appreciate the offer. I'll let Jack know.
I'm sure he'll be real happy about that.
Is Patrick Corbin already ready to rock then?
He is. He did a great job of keeping himself in shape. Just a veteran pitcher who knew what spring training's about, was able to kind of mimic spring training at home. He came in through a live BP the first day he showed up, and I think through 5 innings in that simulated live BP in Arlington before the season started. He went out and threw 1 rehab start, was ready to make a second, and we had an injury pop up, and we needed to recall him. So he's ready to go. His pitch count's built up. You know, I'm sure he's not midseason form yet, but our hope is that he can be competitive, go out and keep the game close, give our offense a chance to get going and give us a chance to win the game.
Is there any update on Cody Bradford with Patrick Corbin starting tomorrow? Do you see an importance in trying to keep a lefty in the rotation?
Well, it's always nice to have a variety and different looks, and the hitters can't adjust. They can't go into a game saying this pitcher looks the same as the guy we saw yesterday. So having some variance there is important. And certainly with Patrick being left-handed, it does allow us to mix it up a little bit. Cody Bradford offers the same. Cody continues to progress. He's doing very well. Our hope is that he'll begin a throwing program next week. And we'll continue to monitor it and see where it goes from there. But so far, so good. He's feeling great. John Gray is making great progress. The x-rays have showed he continues to heal. So we're getting good news on the medical front. Nothing that is imminent in terms of either player's return. However, better than the opposite, where we're receiving bad news or getting timelines pushed back.
CY, when you were talking about the hitting early and the guys, the way they're prepping and stuff, and these guys, they put a lot of pressure on themselves. As a GM and the vice president of operations, all that stuff. Do you ever go up and just say, hey, put your arm around him and say, hey, no, it's cool, we're good, man, we're winning games. just keep rolling, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, that way? Or do you just leave guys alone when they're in those kinds of situations?
Well, it's both, and it depends on the individual. But I think I always err on the side of players deserve to hear the organization believes in them and is supporting them. And I think that when you show that, it also allows you to, you know, in some ways have some accountability when you have to have the opposite conversations of, hey, we need a little bit better from you. So I always want the guys to know that we're in their corner, that we support them. I know how hard this game is. I've been through just about every up and down that you can have in this game. And so I recognize the struggles. I know how they take it home with them. I know what it means to their families. I know when they walk in that clubhouse and the sense of responsibility they feel to their teammates when they're not performing. It's a hard thing. And so I want them to understand that we get it, we know it, but this is a team, and this is all 26 players coming together. And every night, somebody else stepping up and finding a way. And on any given night, it'll be somebody different. And it may be tonight that the player who's been struggling the last five or six games stepping up and helping us win a game.
Chris Young here with you on The Fan. Okay, so after 4.5 years on the job, the day-to-day managing of expectations and the struggles and the stresses of the season, how different is it for you, CY, compared to competing as a player?
Well, it's a lot different. It's one of the things that I've had to learn and grow in this role in terms of just being able to manage the ups and downs and so many different things coming my direction. One of the things I loved about being a player was that every day when I showed up to the ballpark, I knew exactly what I needed to do to prepare, and I controlled that preparation and the ways I was going to help the team win. In this role, you get hit from a number of different directions. There are a lot of things that pop up throughout the day, and you're really there to try to provide guidance, support, vision, and accountability to everybody else. And allow them to go do their jobs respectively so that collectively the entire organization can succeed. And so what that means on a given day, I'm not always positive what the day is going to bring, but knowing that it's my job to be available and provide support, and it's not always perfectly clear, and sometimes I don't have the answers, which makes it hard as well. But, you know, as a player, I knew what I needed to do, and in this role, oftentimes it's not as clear.
All right, CY, here's my weird question for you. As a pitcher, was your hottest game you ever pitched and your coldest game you ever pitched when you were in Kansas City?
Oh, in Kansas City. Trying to think about a hot game. I can remember some cold games. When I was with the Royals, we opened in Minnesota one year. It wasn't in Kansas City, but I was a Royal, and it was light snow coming down. And I was in the bullpen that game, and our starting pitcher hurt his hamstring in the second or third inning. So I had to get loose really quickly and go in the game, which I wasn't used to. And that was kind of later in my career where the body didn't respond as well. But and then the hottest game, you know, I remember a couple games in St. Louis pitching against the Cardinals that were just as hot as anything I can remember. So and then certainly there was no place hotter in the world than old ballpark in Arlington and the visitor's bullpen surrounded in concrete. That was one of the hottest places I've ever been.
Well, I figured that was probably because, you know, being in Kansas City, I've froze to death there watching football, and I've also sweated just profusely at that place. So I thought maybe I caught you at the same spot.
Well, it makes you grateful for the dome that we have and exactly. The environment that we have.
I was there yesterday
every day,
cheering you on. Yeah. There we go.
You know, it was a cold gray day outside yesterday, and it was a great place to come. And our hope is that, you know, as things, the weather heats up here, that our fans want to come to a great environment, watch a great team play, and that we give them a reason to come.
Chris Young here with you on The Fan. Just a couple of minutes here. I did want to kind of fall on my own sword here. After opening day, I was like, what do they see in Luke Jackson? And once again, it's been my lack of baseball expertise has been exposed here, as you guys just you found one there, and he's been great so far. What'd you like about Luke Jackson? What's going well for him?
Well, Luke has an established track record of a very good major league pitcher, and he's won a World Series with the Braves. He has some closing experience, and I think most importantly, it's a player who maybe slipped through the market this winter. And you know, oftentimes you'll find guys like that who are established major league players who maybe don't get valued in the market. They have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and I think that's a good thing. And Luke certainly has that. He's pitching with edge, and he wants to prove to the industry that he's better than he was valued, so to speak. And we're very thankful we had the opportunity to sign him. He's been an important part of our early season success here, and will continue to be throughout the year. And you know, the opening day blip that happens, it'll happen again. But more importantly, he bounced back and showed his character, and he's just a winning player.
When it comes to those blips yesterday, and we're big fans of Mark Church, got to meet him during spring training. Awesome dude. But what can a young pitcher like Mark learn from a game like yesterday?
Just resilience. I think that's the first thing. You know, next time he gets the ball, going back out there and attacking the strike zone, he walked the 9 hitter. That's a big no-no. You got to come in and attack, especially the bottom of the lineup. You got to just go right after those guys, because you're going to get in trouble at the top of the lineup if you got runners on base. So giving himself a little bit of room for error in terms of attacking and not beating himself, that's the main thing. But I always say one of the hardest things about being a Major League Baseball player is on any given night, you're going to be the worst player out on the field. And to fail in front of, you know, 30, 40,000 fans and then show up the very next day with the confidence that you're going to go out and get the job done, that can be a hard thing to do, especially for a young player. And for Mark, it's going to be one of the things we look for in his resilience and perseverance in terms of bouncing back from an outing like that and showing that, hey, I'm better than that and I'm going to go get the job done.
You're the man. Give these Cubs hell. We'll be pulling for you.
Guys, thanks so much. Have a great week.
Salute. Rangers President of Baseball Operations, Chris Young, here with you on your home of the Rangers, 105.3 The Fan. We are now 90 minutes from pregame. They're taking on the Cubbies, and it's time for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 4:30. Here he is, Zach with an H.
Well,
here, Wooly Bully.
What goes great with baseball? How about beer? Happy National Beer Day, fellas. Oh, yeah. What is your most consumed beer? 877-881-1053. I've got the top 10 most consumed beers across America. Now,
I'm going to go with Coors Light.
Okay. Very Patrick Mahomes of beer.
Followed probably... Dude, I don't know. It might be the old school Budweiser next, or Miller Lite. I'm not sure.
Do you ever like keep track? I know you're not drinking, and you said you're coming up on the 10-year anniversary, which is incredible. Congratulations. But do you look at the difference in the beer prices and just how much
you know what?
Gone
I don't look at them. I haven't looked at them for a long time.
A six pack is almost $12.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
It's crazy.
$2 a beer?
Yeah, bro.
Tough, yeah.
Holy cow.
Like, I wonder the difference 10 years ago when you stopped.
Yeah.
To now.
You used to be able to like pull money out of your ashtray, like coins and stuff, and
get
buy
your tall boy.
A six pack of beer. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I think like an expensive six pack of a craft beer was right around $7 or $8 back then.
Mm.
You know?
Man.
But
Those days.
The fanciest beers I would get there towards the end would be a nice pale ale. I just like the flavor profile on that. But it was usually the Bock beers as well.
You know, on the box.
Yes.
I'm gonna guess that as health conscious as the United States tries to be, is Michelob Ultra up there?
It's in the top three.
Is it?
Yeah.
Doing numbers.
It's in the top three it is. And honestly, 8 beer would be a good one too.
Yeah,
that's good beer.
Very good. It's a good fishing beer.
It is.
When you want to drink 20 beers and maintain your swimsuit body.
That's the way to do it there. And Heineken comes in at number 10.
I think with our population, can I guess another one?
Yeah.
With our population being as diverse as it is, there's got to be one of the Mexican beers, right?
Corona.
Modelo. Yeah. Corona.
Might be number one.
Okay.
Might be the top spot.
I think
it was
as diverse
both
as the population.
Both of them are in the top five.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
Both of them are in the top five. And both of them are just smooth,
delicious.
Modelo is another great fish and beer.
100%.
Lucius, you got to look out for the Coronas, though, because you leave them in the sun, they'll turn skunky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got to keep them cold. 100%. Yeah. Maybe a little salt in there and some lime.
Yeah.
Oof, delicious.
Corona on a boat, though, you can't use the bottles because you never want to bring bottles on a boat because if it breaks. Because you fish without your shoes sometimes.
Yeah, you
so you don't want to be walking around.
You drown those bottles, man. Yeah. That's how you drown them.
Do you have a go-to fishing beer, Lucius?
Fishing beer, Coors Light. That's my main favorite beer.
Not too full.
When I want to put my pinky up and drink a beer, it's Stella.
Okay.
Stella is delicious.
Yeah. Stella's so damn
can't
good.
Can't drink too many of them, though, because it'll smack you in the face.
It will.
Stella's.
It will.
Gosh, I can't remember what that beer was called at our event that we went to, but that thing was freaking nuts.
Oh, yes, in Fort Worth.
I had like two of those. The next thing you know, I felt like I just had 10 shots.
Martin House
Brewery.
What was that thing called?
They're doing it right. I can't remember what the name of that. It was like a coffee.
But it was a what's called a barley wine.
Yeah,
like it's like beer
that
wine.
That was a drunk fest.
That thing was
got like
stout.
15% alcohol in it.
That was
It was.
Yeah, one beer is like four beers.
I definitely.
Sound like Steel Reserve.
Yes, I bit off more than I could chew with that one. But it was absolutely delicious. That's the thing. It goes down so easy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can just crush a bunch of these. Wow. Next thing you know, you wait 30 minutes and you're stumbling and bumbling around. Like, you don't know where the hell you are.
Stand up in the men's room and you fall down.
Yeah, it's an embarrassing moment.
Walk out with no pants.
Yeah. where are my clothes?
What's the problem? Oh, wait, hold on. Pants.
Dos Equis being texted in.
Oh, Dos Equis is excellent.
Our buddy I got to put a whole lot of limes in it for me to get a good flavor out of it.
I love them, man. Yeah. Dos Equis are so good. Corona, salt, and lime.
Yeah.
Tovash said, not a beer drinker, but does Angry Orchard count? That's a shot of Fireball.
It's a cider.
That's a cider. Angry, the Fireball?
Cider.
My man's catching catfish drinking Fireball.
That's the way to do it.
Somebody check on him.
My man, seriously, he catches a lot of catfish. If you want to go catfish, Tovash is your guy. He catches some fish.
817 says 24-pack of Miller Lite for $21. It's not horrible.
That's not a bad deal at all.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Shiner Blonde from the 850.
It's good beer.
Yingling being texted in.
That's our guy, Black and Gold B. Then he a Yingling guy?
He does love the Yinglings. The Heineken 0.0.
Used to be a Bud Light guy.
Yeah.
Changed course about 18 months ago, suddenly.
469.
And the song I want to shoot at all the Tolos tonight.
Yeah. Here's the song I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Crosby, Stills,
Nash. I'm thinking about Southern Cross.
My stepdad still drinks Coors Banquet.
Yeah, wow.
There you go, the Yellow Bellies. There you go. Wow. Now we're playing
That's
ball.
A banquet for beer.
Yeah.
Budweiser getting texted
that's
in.
That's a Bud Heavy.
That is tough.
You that's what we drank at the parade. That was my downfall.
That hit us pretty good.
That hit me so hard.
They used to make this thing called Budweiser Select.
Select, yeah.
That thing would whip you.
Yeah.
I peed on my couch. I thought I was going to the bathroom.
Yes.
Been there.
So the Bud Ice.
Bud Ice. Yeah.
That was tough.
For the pack of Newports, boy. Y'all drinking. Y'all are drinking.
Pack of Newports.
Pack of Newports shorts in a box, bro.
We're having ourselves a day.
Let me have one of those beers in a Newport while you're at it.
Number 10 most consumed beer in America is Heineken Original.
Heineken's darn
good stuff.
It's good beer.
Number 10, we got Natty Light.
Bennett brought us is standing up right now
it's
cheering on
BP
this one.
Beer.
Yeah.
Bush Light comes in at number 8.
Natty Light is at the end of the week.
Yeah.
Like you just spent all the money.
You did.
Yeah. She's like, man, I still got to get some beer.
I got to get something. Come on. Those kids, that's all they drink. I go, and they're all thinking, I go, get an extra job, man. You buy better beer.
Hey, go DoorDash. Number 7 is Budweiser.
I'm telling you, man, that wrecked me at that parade. That just wrecked me.
And we were having the tall boys.
You know what's interesting is some states you go to will be like Budweiser states just randomly, and everybody's drinking Bud.
Yeah.
But down here, it's much more of, I feel like a Miller Lite.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Cowboys.
That and the Hispanic beers.
Yeah, Bud Lights, too.
Yeah.
Bud Light.
Do they still drink Bud Light, or is it still on the S list?
I think Sean was drinking them in the box yesterday.
Bring them back, baby.
It's going to be pretty damn high on this list, Lucius.
Okay.
6 is Miller Lite. So there you go.
Good beer.
Whatever happened to Miller Genuine Draft? You know,
MGD, baby.
Beautiful
classic can.
Yeah, beautiful. Somebody texted in MGD. I think Pastry Chef Eric texted in MGD.
Baltimore.
Which one is that that has a lady that she has Beyonce on it swinging in the chair?
I believe that's Miller High Life.
The High Life. That's the champagne of beers. Yes.
I did like the Miller High Life.
That's a fish and beer. That's the original fish and beer
right
there.
Beer.
Yeah.
That was the one you could get for $5 a 12-pack for a long time. Into the 2000s.
Oh. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Top 5, Corona at 5.
Yeah.
Coors Light at 4.
Okay.
We got Michelob Ultra at 3.
Healthy folk.
Man, wow. You drink like 8 of them, though.
Yeah. Oh, jeez, I feel good.
Let's go running.
Let's play pickleball.
Yeah. Number 2 is Bud Light, Lucius.
Yeah, okay.
Number 2.
I knew it. I see them all over the road.
Yep. People are just throwing them out.
Yeah.
Number 1. Most consumed beer, though, is Modelo Especial.
Yeah, it gotta be.
Modelo, baby.
Yeah, gotta be.
It's delicious.
You know, Billy Bob in Landman, he drank the Michelob Ultras, yeah. And he said he's quit
not
drinking.
He's not drinking.
That's
I'm not
right.
A drinker.
He's not drinking. I'm drinking this beer.
It gets in an argument with the bartender every time about it.
Like, yeah, I'm not drinking.
Do you think I could start drinking Ultras again and have it not be drinking?
No.
You get hammered off those still?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, I bet you would, having not.
Yeah, you can't. Don't do it, Dawson.
Okay, maybe next year. Ari Temkin, live from San Antonio, joins us to talk the NCAA championship game coming up here tonight. And Ari joins us live next in the Nation. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. We're 15 minutes from L.A. Live. L.A. Live early tonight because at 5:40 we'll be in the final approach to the Rangers pregame show, talking sports with you there. Expressway still at 5:20, commercial free to the top, but LA Live in 15 minutes. Let's get Ari Temkin here live from San Antonio from TuneIn Radio, talking about this NCAA tournament final tonight, featuring your Houston Cougars and your Florida Gators. How much does how much Houston pride do you have tonight? How much in-state pride is going with you into this one?
I was recruited by the University of Houston.
Okay.
Play football.
That'll make you like them.
That's the story I told you real quick where I was at Rick's Cabaret down there in Houston.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And they faked a fight between two guys to get me in.
Yeah.
So I'll always have a special place in my heart for the Houston Cougar football team and what they were able to do. Like two guys acted like they fought. Everybody rushes out. One guy just two-hand shoves me into the bar.
Nice. That's a good move. Sometimes you need a good distraction.
I walk in, and next thing I know, I'm like, oh my gosh, what just happened here? And I just walked in and kind of hung out. And then I see him outside. The two guys are like hugging it up, like, oh, it's okay. Let's go in, you know.
The bouncers let him in. The 80s were a wild time.
They let them all in.
As Ari Temkin joins us now here in the G-Bag Nation. And a good afternoon, Ari. How the heck are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Good. You know, I still can't get over how Duke let that thing slip away on Saturday night. Did Shire get out coached there in that final minute, not coming up with a plan for getting the ball inbounds?
It's a great question. I mean, I share that sentiment. I mean, it is still 36 hours later, whatever it is, just insane that Duke lost that game. I mean, yeah, I think you can look specifically at the way that Kelvin Sampson managed the end of the game and make that, you know, deliberation maybe more so on the Sampson side than on the Shire side.
Okay.
But I just think, like, the whole thing going into that game and into this tournament was, well, nobody's tested Duke. So what's going to happen when they finally get tested? And Houston has been tested all year, and they play close games all year, and they have come from behind. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I just think it was Duke hit a three. Cooper Flagg hit a three about 3 minutes to go, and it just felt like the game was over at that point.
Yeah.
And I think they thought that too. Hmm. And like they hit at that point throughout the season, nobody ever like punched back after that. That was like, they took the shot and then that was it. And then teams would die. But Houston's different, man. Houston will take you into deep water and you think you're in a good place and then they drown you. And that's what they've done all year. So I think both teams kind of played to where they were all year. The difference was no team had contested Duke that deep into a game like that, whereas with Houston, they'd been there before. And I do think, again, Sampson did a great job to manage defense and offense, and so maybe he outcoached Shire at the end, but I think it was more about just the mentality of the teams than anything else.
Walter Clayton Jr. has just been on an absolute tear for the Gators. How does Houston slow him down?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the key here. And the advantages that Houston had against Duke aren't really existent here against a Florida team that has a lot of experience. And it's not just how good he's been in terms of scoring the basketball. It's been when he's done it. I mean, he's just been a killer in the second half and closing games out. But, I mean, defense is what Houston does. So, you know, I think Emmanuel Sharp is going to probably get kind of the initial responsibility of him. I think they're going to give him a lot of different looks. What was interesting, too, is we talked with Hollis Price, the former Oklahoma star who played for Kelvin Sampson in a Final Four and is now an assistant coach for Sampson at Houston. And he brought up Wade Taylor for Texas A&M. And, you know, they played Texas A&M twice last year. in the regular season and Taylor went off, and then in the postseason in the second round to get to Dallas for the Sweet 16 last year, they beat A&M and really held Taylor in check. And so I think what they did defensively on Taylor in that game will be a pretty good indication of what they're going to do with Clayton, because Hollis Price mentioned Wade Taylor specifically when bringing up the kind of the defensive assignments that they're going to have. So, I think that's the approach they'll take. And look, I mean, they doubled Flag a ton in the first half, and Flag did a great job getting rid of the ball and kind of killing them. And second half, they played him straight up, and we obviously saw what happened, especially down the stretch of that game with Juwan Roberts. So I think that's one of the things we'll see in this game too.
I mean, Duke had three ball handlers, great decision makers, and they got flustered. How do you think Florida handles that pressure if Houston gets in that rhythm tonight?
Yeah, and it's so interesting, General, because I think it was just more of like they didn't realize that Houston could still punch back. Like, it's they just hadn't seen it, or it was like they would put a team away and then that was it. Like, Duke decided with 2 minutes to go in the game, they were done scoring. They didn't need to score anymore. They were done. And so I just think that mentality seeped in. And we see this in sports all the time, right? Like, you get that mentality, you start to relax a little bit. And the other side, like, that's where Houston wants you. Houston wants you there. So, I think part of that, too, is, as you just discussed, General, like, it's part of that is the inexperience of Duke, having three guys that are freshmen. I mean, Malawach is 7'2", has a 9'8" standing reach, had zero rebounds in that game for Duke.
Wow.
Just insane. And, the other thing is, going into that game, the favorites had won. I think we talked about this last week when I was on, heading into the Final Four. Going into that game, favorites had won 15 straight in this tournament. It was the first time ever that all favorites won in the Elite Eight and the Sweet 16. So it's been an insanely chalky tournament. But the other stat is that 19 of the last 20 years, one of the top two favorites going into the weekend has won the NCAA championship. Well, the top two favorites going to the weekend were Duke and Florida. So we were so close to seeing that happen yet again. The only exception to that was when UConn won in 14. But beyond that, last two decades, 19 last 20 years, the favorite going into the weekend has won it, the top two favorites. So we'll see if Florida can make it now 20 and 21.
Hey, Ari, sorry about that. I mean to interrupt you there. You should have figured by all these years working with you, I'd have known when you were stopped talking there, right? My apologies there. Hey, listen, buddy, is there anything to make of the fact that these head coaches are 30 years difference in age apart?
I'm so glad you brought this up, Rodas, because, think about it like this. How close was Duke to winning that game? And so... Yeah. Now you're looking at a situation where you have two coaches under 40 going for a national championship.
Right.
And I do think that would have been a huge narrative going into that game. Sampson is trying to become the oldest coach in the history of college basketball to win a national title at 69 years old. This is a guy that has done it everything except for that.
Right.
He's basically done everything in his career except for win a championship. And, I know that he would tell you, because he's told us, multiple times, like, winning a championship, that's not why I got into it. He got into coaching. He talks about this all the time, about like influencing and growing with boys to men kind of thing. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's very much a part of the ethos of Kelvin Sampson. So winning a title, it'd be great for him, but it won't mean everything, but he is very much this old school, new school mix. And I think people that love like the olden days of college basketball where guys stayed and they built a culture around that team with guys that were there for 3 or 4 years and they didn't lose a bunch of players to the portal. Like, that's Houston. So anybody that's like, oh, this new age of college basketball, it's terrible. I don't want to support it. I don't like it. I'm not going to watch it. I can't stand it. Like, Houston's the antithesis of what many people think of for the modern era. But at the same time, they've got three guys shooting over 40% from three. They've got, they're as a team, the best three-point shooting team in college basketball. So, like, they're sort of a great blend of new age and old age. But I think to your point, Broadus, like, yeah, this is very much becoming the norm. I mean, think about how many great college basketball coaches we've lost that didn't want to deal with this modern era. And so you are left with a lot of young coaches. And I think kind of like with the NFL, like, think about how much GMs have changed in the NFL.
Sure.
Where before you had former players.
You're right.
I've got options traders. So I think like as the jobs change, then the capacity to fulfill those jobs and the skill sets needed to fulfill those jobs change. I think that's where we're at right now. We're at a very much a you know, a different period of time in terms of the types of coaches you're looking for and the types of characteristics you're looking for when you're wanting to hire a coach.
Well, and then with the transfer portal now, you've got L.J. Cryer, who was a reserve on the Baylor team that won a natty. He's got the opportunity to become the first player to win a national championship with two different programs. Is that something you think that is going to end up being the norm as L.J. Cryer attempts to make history tonight?
That is kind of wild. I mean, no, because I just, like, what's the likelihood you win a title and go somewhere else?
True.
You know, it feels like you win a title and either go to the NBA or you stay there trying to win another one. And it was, you know, it was kind of bizarre circumstances considering, you know, LJ was up and coming at Baylor. And, I mean, he definitely wasn't a huge part of their success that season, but he wasn't nothing. I mean, he wasn't a guy that rode the bench and didn't play. So we'll probably see it more now than ever because it never happens. But I still think, like, there's just such a connection these guys have with the teams they have when they win titles, and it's hard to go against that.
Ari Temkin, TuneIn Radio, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the game, sir.
Take care, guys. Be well.
Ari Temkin with you here on The Fan. Okay, let's step aside. An early edition of LA Live because at 5:40 we'll be heading for the Rangers pregame show. They're in Chicago tonight to take on the Cubs, and LA Live's coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation.